Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Gita. Jai Om Vishnu Bhava Paramahansa Paribhaja Gitarja Sarasva Shri Shri Madhya Svangva Shri Bhakti Saram Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Prabhupada Gita. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindiki Jai. Iskand Pandra Acharya Shri Prabhupada Gita. Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Gita. Premza Gosri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindiki Jai. Sisi Radha Krishna Govinath Shyam Pundarara Kundagiri Govardhan Ki Jai. Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Navadri Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Shri Shri Uddhi Dham Ki Jai. Tulasi Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Gamgamai Ki Jai. Jamanamai Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi. Parinama Sankirtana Ki Jai. Shri Shri Brihatmadanga Ki Jai. Transcendental Prashad Distribution Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gornitaya Ki Jai. Shri Shri Tramakshan Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Bhakti Vedanta Manadama Ki Jai. Shamavira Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Soaring from Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, from 3rd Canto, 23rd Chapter, verse number 6. So everyone will repeat. Kardama uvacha.
Kardama uvacha.
Tushto.
Tushto.
Aam. Adya.
Adya.
Tava.
Tava.
Manavi.
Manavi.
Maradaya.
Maradaya.
Shushushaya.
Shushushaya.
Paramaya.
Paramaya.
Paraya.
Paraya.
Cha.
Bhaktya.
Yo. Dehinam. Ayam. Ativa. Suri. Sa. Deho. Navikshita. Samuchita. Shapitum. Mad. Arte. Kardama uvacha. Tushto humadya tabamana bamana daya.
Tushto humadya tabamana bimana daya.
Tushto humadya tabamana bimana daya.
Tushto humadya tabamana bimana daya.
Shushushaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya.
Shushushaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya.
Shushrushaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya.
Shushrushaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya.
Yo dehi namaya mati vasuritsa deho.
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 Navekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte.
Navekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte.
Navekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte.
Navekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte.
Kardamo vacha. Tushto humadya tabamana vimana daya.
Tushto humadya tabamana vimana daya.
Shushushaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya.
Shushushaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya.
Yo dehi namaya mati vasuritsa deho.
Yo dehi namaya mati vasuritsa deho.
Navekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte.
Navekshita samuchita
kshapitum. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, today I am very much pleased with you for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Since the body is so dear to embodied beings, I am astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf. Responsibly, Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, it is indicated here that one's body is very dear, yet Devahuti was so faithful to her husband that not only did she serve him with great devotion, service and respect, but she did not even care for her own health. This is called selfless service. It appears that Devahuti had no sense pleasure even with her husband, otherwise she would not have deteriorated in health. Acting to facilitate Kardama Muni's engagement in spiritual elevation, she continually assisted him, not caring for her bodily comfort. It is the duty of a faithful wife and chaste wife to help her husband in every respect, especially when the husband is engaged in Krishna consciousness. In this case, the husband also amply rewarded his wife. This is not to be expected by a woman who is the wife of an ordinary person. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namaskritam naram na chayvam rotamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jaya mudiraya nastapai ishu apadresh nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utama shloke bhakti bhagavati naishtiki om agyanati manandasya agyananjana sarakaya chaksura nalitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manovistam shtapitam jena bhutale svayam rupa karamayam dharati svapadantikam. In this case, the husband also amply rewarded the wife. This is not to be expected by a woman who is the wife of an ordinary person. I just reread the last two sentences of Prabhupada's purport. I'll read the verse again and then comment. Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, today I am very much pleased with you for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Today the body is so dear to embodied beings, I am astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf. I guess I'm the third American to speak in a row in Bhagavatam class. So in Australia they call them septic tanks, yanks. I hope you'll forgive the accent. I'm sitting on the edge here because I have a little knee injury. Usually I like to sit in a kind of regular cross-legged position, but it's a little bit of a strain. There are some interesting lessons to be learned from this verse and purport. One thing is that Devahuti is showing that she can be very detached from her body and serve in such a way that she's almost carefree of the body. And this is something that is the characteristic of many great souls, that they work so hard in their devotional service that they are detached from the body and apparently have no awareness of the body. This is a description we find about Prahlad Maharaj, that he had no awareness of the body. And in descriptions of other great souls, we find sometimes they are avadutas. They don't seem to have any consciousness or awareness of the body. This was said of Bhishma, for example, when he was lying in the bed of arrows. Of course, he had the benediction that he could leave his body whenever he wanted. But he seemed not to have any concern for the material body. And there were Rishabhdev and others who kind of, you know, wandered about Jadvarat, seemingly completely oblivious to bodily functions, almost unconscious that there was anything to do with bodily concern. There was a time when Prabhupada was asked, I think it was in Bombay, it was an Indian audience anyway, and that question that was asked is probably not so relevant, or wasn't so relevant then as it would be today, but someone asked Prabhupada, what do you think about hell? And that's kind of a question that we might elaborate on a bit today. And we were hearing yesterday how yuktahara viharasya yukta karma sthita shreshtasya. We have to be sort of balanced in how we eat, sleep, work, and conduct ourselves in our recreation. So that was the question. What is your movement, or what do you think of health? And Prabhupada immediately said, no one is healthy, everybody is dying. They're very stark, very heavy answer. But it was kind of funny because the question was, you know, what do you think about? Well, actually, we don't care. Everybody, nobody's healthy. Everybody's dying. So it's kind of a counter to getting overly concerned with, you know, what we think about our health, because our philosophy tells us we should come to the point of not being concerned about the material body. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is another person who, when we read his biography, we read that he was told by the doctors he shouldn't strain himself, he had a heart condition and so on, but he was completely oblivious, he didn't care, he was not concerned with those kinds of orders. He just went ahead as if nothing was there, and he said, I think it's quoted, that it's up to Krishna to determine when I will go or when I will not go. Another person that sometimes comes to mind when we think about this was Jayananda, who's one of our contemporaries. Jayananda worked very hard. Sometimes he stayed up many nights without sleep. Very often he would sleep 3 or 4 hours a night. And some people give the opinion that his early demise, his contraction of cancer and so on, was due to the fact that he was completely oblivious to the material body. He just didn't care what it was and what was going on. He just did whatever had to be done for Krishna. So this is a very good trait. On the other hand, we have the notion that Prabhupada was very ordered in everything he did. He took massage, he ate every day, he did things at a certain interval, he went for walks, and he was concerned that devotees, I think we heard yesterday in a class that it was written twice somewhere in the teachings of Prabhupada that we should sleep for 6 hours a day. So even though Prabhupada himself, he was the acharya and he established for Krishna consciousness many things that aren't so commonly done nowadays, 24-year-old sannyasis and many other things. He personally conducted the weddings in the early days. That Prabhupada was very austere. There's a story that when he was in New York once and all the boys were going up or down in the elevator and they asked him that he should go to Hawaii, he should take it easy, his health wasn't good. And Prabhupada said, I want to die with my boots on, like Arjuna. So that was kind of the example he set, and we saw that he was translating right up until the very last moments. He was translating his books. It was just amazing, up until the last day or the last few hours. So he exhibited that kind of lack of concern, but on the other hand, he was very ordered in the way he said that if I didn't eat, if I don't go for my walks, and if I don't take my massages, I would die. So he wanted his disciples also to be very balanced and ordered in their yukta-hara, viharasa, yukta-chesta, sukarmasa, their eating, sleeping, working, and as the Bhagavad Gita says, recreation, whatever exactly that means. Of course, our recreation is Harinam, right? Because when you exercise Harinam, you're practicing all the good things that the body needs to do to get exercised. Hatha yoga, jnana yoga, raja yoga, dhyana yoga, it's all there in bhakti yoga. So when you jump and dance and perspire in kirtan for many hours, all the bodily limbs are getting very nicely exercised. So you're practicing a form of hatha yoga at that time. So Devahuti is being glorified for being very devoted. And the key, of course, is to be very, very alert and very devoted to Krishna consciousness. And to, if one takes care of the body, to do so only so that one will not be overly concerned, won't be caught up in the nature of the body and be thinking about it and be meditating on it. Because the goal of life, actually, as we understand from Rupa Goswami, is to always remember Krishna, to not let a second go by when we're not thinking about Krishna, when we're not meditating on Krishna. And, of course, this is not easily achieved, and it requires a great deal of practice and a great deal of meditation and concern and commitment. We hear about how the gopis were, even when Krishna wasn't there, of course they thought about him when he was there, but they would see Krishna everywhere. Sometimes they would look at the tamal tree, and the tamal tree is darkish in color and has a sort of curved form, which reminds the gopis of the curved form of Shyamasundara, the threefold beautiful curved form of Krishna standing and playing his flute. And sometimes the gopis would cry, very often they would cry, when Krishna was not present. And this crying, Prabhupada said, was no different than their laughing and enjoying, because it was all for Krishna. It was all very deep meditation on Krishna. So they would see this tumultuary from sometimes a distance, and they would actually think it was Krishna. And Radharani quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Prabhupada in one of the purports mentions that she says to her compatriots, to her friends, her associates, that when I leave my body, I want you to drape my hands around the tamal tree so that I can be meditating on Krishna in my last moments. So the gopis were always thinking, even when Krishna was away, they were deeply meditating on how he's running in through the fields and he may be stepping on sharp stones, maybe hurting his feet. So they were always in anxiety. Every second they were thinking whether he was there, and when he was there they were always thinking about him because he was there and they saw him and they heard him. But when he was not there, they were always thinking of him, constantly, nonstop. So in this is the mood of pure devotional service, to always be thinking of Krishna and never forgetting Krishna, not even for a second. And then one can come to the stage of prema and bhakti and bhava and loving Krishna and wanting to be serving the divine couple Radha and Krishna as a manjari or a resident of Vrindavan or somehow serving them always. Of course we serve them by fulfilling Krishna's desire. Krishna desires that yaidam paramam bhuyam, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that there is no one more dear to me than one who is practicing preaching, who is enlivening, who is widening the circle of Krishna consciousness, who is sharing the secret with others. So in that way we're also very intimately serving the divine couple, serving the desires of Krishna and Radharani. So this is another very intimate way of associating with Krishna, by promoting him, his teaching, by being very committed to that process, to preaching. It's been said that without preaching there is no life, and if one doesn't preach, one is a dead man. So the preaching spirit is one of the things that Prabhupada meant to give us when he said that I want to die with my boots on, that this preaching runs parallel with purifying ourselves internally. And of course it's complementary. The more we preach, the more we purify ourselves, and the more we purify ourselves, the more we want to preach. So these two things are mutually complementary. They help each other. So other things to be understood from this verse about is that one should be devoted to one we regard to be superior to us. And we were talking the other day about how demigods like Lord Shiva can be worshipped, and how there's a seat in a temple in Soho Street for Lord Shiva. This is something very novel. I didn't know about this. But when we first came to England, we were sort of missionaries then, and 1968, Prabhupada immediately said, one of you must go to Oxford and start a temple there. He was very eager to have a temple there, so I dutifully went up there on a train one morning and looked at a church. So Prabhupada then came up to see the church. It was a Catholic church with a dome on it, and the key was about this long. I remember it was one of those real old buildings, and when he looked at it, he was kind of pointing to the things of his cane, and he said, well, over here on this side we can have a picture of Jesus Christ and we can keep it in the temple. So it's like kind of shocking, controversial thing. The prophet said we could have a picture of Jesus Christ in Hare Krishna temple, but he did say it. The idea was that people like Jesus Christ, like Lord Shiva, like Lord Brahma, they can be worshipable, just like we can worship each other, because we're Vaishnavas. And as long as Lord Shiva, as we know, is the greatest of Vaishnavas, we can worship Lord Shiva with the idea of ultimately it going to Krishna, and Krishna being the ultimate object of our worship. So, as we were hearing also in the class, I think on Sunday, Giriraj Maharaj was speaking about how we worship Krishna through his devotees. And he mentioned the Padma Purana, Yeme Bhakta Jana Parta, Yeme Bhakta Jano, that Krishna says to Arjuna, to Parta, that one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee, but one who claims to be the devotee of my devotee, that person I consider to be my devotee. So worship of those who are representing Krishna in some way or other, like Kardama Muni, who is a very, very exalted person, is very beneficial for our spiritual life, to worship people that we consider more advanced than we are. Very, very important to us. And sometimes even we worship others. There were some very nice verses, or very nice references cited in the last 2 days. I'm in class. One of them was Lord Shiva's direction, his declaration, Lord Shiva himself, that it is Aradhananam Sarvesham, Vishnu Aradhanam Param. When he was asked what's the highest form of worship, he said that worship of Vishnu is the highest, but to worship things connected with Vishnu is even higher. So that means all the devotees. That means the tulsi plant. That means the peacock feather. It can even be worshipped. Everything connected with Krishna, the temple grounds, the graffiti on the walls in Vrindavan that has Krishna's names can be worshipped. The ground that Krishna walked on, the sands of Ramanreti can be worshipped. The books are like deities. They can be worshipped. The teachings of Srila Prabhupada, they can be worshipped. Harinam, the holy name, that can be worshipped. It's respected. Prasadam can be worshipped. You know, we see people sometimes bowing down to Prasadam. As Vipramukhya was saying the other day, how in Chaturmasa people, they put their hands behind their back and they just lick up the cardboard box-like tasting combination of dal and rice. But it's actually a form of worship, and we heard that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to do that during Chaturmasa, that he would put his hands behind his back and just take a few bites a day, lick it off the cement floor, dal and rice combination. So prasadam is worshipped in that way. So everything is worshipable by Krishna. And when Prahlad Maharaj in his maturity came across an avaduta, this avaduta was just lying on the ground, the great soul. Like Judd Bharat was kind of like that. You know, he didn't talk to people, he just kind of kept to himself. So he asked this avaduta, what instruction do you have for me? You're supposed to get instruction from advanced devotees. So he said that, well, his guru tamas, he called them guru, Atamas or Uttama Gurus, the very most excellent gurus, he called them, were the bee and the python. And he studied them. He said he just would lie there like the python, because the python would just lie and wait for food to come into its mouth, whether they be insects or rats or whatever they eat. But without endeavoring, he would just take whatever Krishna provided. And the bee, because the bee would only take whatever it needed and it would fly away, it would get some pollen from the flowers and fly away. It wouldn't hoard or store anything. So he said, these are excellent gurus. So there's also a conversation, I'm going to read a couple of passages, from the Uddhava Gita, from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where another avaduta says that he has 24 gurus that he looks up to. And there are the wind, the water, the arrow maker, and so on. So I'm going to read a couple of passages just to give an idea about how there's something to learn from everyone. And when it is said that everyone should become guru, it also means that we can learn, of course the word guru is now in the English dictionary, it means teacher, instructor. But a devotee learns from all experiences, all failures. I think Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that the pillars are the failures are the pillars of success, something like that. So there's something to learn. So I want to just read a couple of them. Make sure. Thank you. So the Avaduta is saying to the king, King Yadu, I have taken shelter of 24 gurus, not one, not two, not three, but 24, who are the following: the earth, air, sky, water, fire, moon, sun, pigeon and python, the sea, moth, honeybee, elephant and honey thief, the deer, the fish, the prostitute Pingala, the Kurara bird, and the child, the young girl, arrow maker, serpent, spider, wasp. My dear king, by studying their activities, I have learned the science of the self. So I won't have time to go into all of these, but just to talk about something. This is very worthwhile reading, because it gives us an idea of how one can see Krishna everywhere and learn from all of the different elements in Krishna's creation, or many of them. So, the earth. A sober person, even when harassed by other living beings, should understand that his aggressors are acting helplessly under the control of God, and thus he should never be distracted from progress on his own path. This rule I have learned from the earth, and the purport is, the earth is the symbol of tolerance. By deep oil drilling, atomic explosions, pollution, and so on, the earth is constantly harassed by demoniac living entities. Sometimes lush forests are cut down by greedy men with commercial interests, and thus a wasteland is created. Sometimes the earth's surface is soaked by the blood of soldiers fighting in savage warfare. Yet despite all these disturbances, the earth continues to provide all the necessities of living beings. In this way, one may learn the art of tolerance by studying the earth. Very instructive. And these purports, by the way, were written by, not by Prabhupada, by Hridayananda Maharaj and his team of translators. So this is another instance of where we can see that Prabhupada empowered his disciples to give very insightful and illuminating commentary on the Bhagavatam, and they continue very nicely in his in the wake of his teachings. A saintly person, this is the 38th text, I'm reading from the 7th chapter of the 11th canto. A saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his efforts to the service of others and to make the welfare of others the sole reason for his existence. This is the verse. Similarly, as the disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself to others. And this is the purport. Great mountains bear unlimited quantities of earth, which in turn give sustenance to innumerable forms of life such as trees, grass, birds, animals, and so on. Mountains also pour forth unlimited quantities of crystalline, what do you say in England? Line? Crystalline. In the United States we say crystalline. I told you, you have to bear with the strange accent. Crystalline water in the form of waterfalls and rivers, and this water gives life to all. By studying the example of mountains, one should learn the art of providing for the happiness of all living entities. Similarly, one may take excellent lessons from the pious trees, who offer innumerable benefits such as fruits, flowers, cooling shade, and medicinal extracts. Even when a tree is suddenly cut down and dragged away, the tree does not protest, but continues to give service to others in the form of firewood. Thus, one should become the disciple of such magnanimous trees and learn from them the qualities of saintly conduct. As many of you know, trees are hugged and bowed down to in India. They're worshipped, and banyan trees in particular. You've probably seen how banyan trees grow through houses and walls sometimes because people won't cut them down. In the West, as soon as they start to form new roots, they're cut off because they don't know what they are. Or they don't worship them, but they're considered to be very sacred. In fact, the Krishna Balaram tree, which I'm sure many of you have seen, how many have seen that tree? Yeah, that tree, I asked Unabandhu once how that tree got its name, and I thought that it was there for a long time, you know, many decades or centuries even, wherever, before the Krishna Balaram temple was set up. But then I asked others who lived there for some time, and they said that this tree only came to be called the Krishna Balaram tree since the Krishna Balaram mandir was set up. So, as you know, it's a Sami tree, the darker tree, and what's the top one? A people tree. It's a white tree. And so that white tree is meant to represent Balaram, the dark tree is meant to represent Krishna. But people routinely now, as they start the Prakram path, as they start the walk, they bow down to that tree, they circumambulate that tree, they hug the tree, they touch their forehead to that tree. And there are many other combinations of trees like that. Of course, that's a unique tree because the people tree is growing out of the Sami tree. But there are other instances where the Kadamba trees are growing out of small trees, and they represent Radha Krishna. You see them on the Parikram path. And Lord Chaitanya also talked about being more tolerant than the tree. And as we're reading here, the tree is a symbol of many things. It's a symbol of giving. It's a symbol of when it's full of fruits and flowers. Prabhupada once told us how it's bent over in a gesture of humility because it's got a lot to give. And in the wintertime, when the leaves and flowers and fruits are not there, it tends to be erect, and that's a symbol of some individual who's very proud of, but doesn't have anything to give. So in other words, pride means that there is nothing to give, and humility means there is a lot to give. So the tree is a very important symbol, and as Lord Chaitanya said, the tree is a symbol of tolerance. It's cut for wood, the trees and the leaves are picked. In India, people are very careful about picking leaves and fruits and flowers during the nighttime because they know that the trees can have feelings. And they say that if you pick it at night, you'll startle the tree by waking it up. So they don't pick the flowers at night or leaves or fruits. And then the tree gives shade all the time. And when there's great wind and rain, snow, and hail, the tree doesn't make any protest. So the tree is a great symbol of tolerance. And sometimes people are carving into the tree things in the West. They have a tendency to carve initials and so-and-so loves so-and-so with an arrow and through a heart and all that. They do that here? They must. And you never hear the tree protesting. The tree doesn't protest, and it provides fuel, it provides so many things, sap, fruits, flowers, never protest. According to Srila Madhvacharya, the word Parartaikanta Sambhava indicates that one should dedicate all of one's wealth and other assets to the welfare of others. By one's acquired opulence, one should especially try to please the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus demigods, as well as all truly respectable superior personalities, will automatically be pleased. By developing saintly conduct, as described in this verse, one will become tolerant, and this will free one from the useless agitation of the material senses, which drive one to wander throughout the world, searching in vain for material happiness. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also emphasized the tree's quality of tolerance, taror iva sahishnuna. One who is as tolerant as a tree can chant the holy name of Krishna constantly, finding ever new satisfaction. Here's a story in this regard. There's a colleague of Srila Prabhupada's named Mr. Kapoor, still he's still somewhat known throughout Vrindavan. He's a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we went to see him a few years ago, and we asked him questions about what was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur like, what did he look like, how did he sound, did he have a deep voice, you know, what did he, how did he sit, how did he walk, how did he comport himself, and he was remembering a lot of things about him. It was very nice. So he knew Prabhupada. They were godbrothers and friends, and when Prabhupada, before he was sannyas, he called him Abhai, and then later on, Abhai Babu. So, Prabhupada told him when he was still a householder that Kapoorji said, I'm going to go to the West someday. This was after he met his spiritual master. And he said that I'm going to preach Krishna consciousness in the West. He said, really? How are you going to do that? He said, well, I have a secret formula, but I won't tell you what it is right now. So later, after Prabhupada took sannyas, and he was staying at the Pradhanavadar temple, Kapoor happened to come into the temple and he saw Prabhupada, but he didn't recognize him because some time had passed, 15 or 20 years, and Prabhupada was shaved up and a little thin. So he didn't notice. Then he looked at, Prabhupada saw him and said, Kapoorji. And Dr. Kapoor said, Abhai. He looked at him and he recognized his face, Abhai Babu. He said, yes, it's you. And then he told him the whole story, how he decided to take sannyas, he was writing Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was going to go to the West. He said, yes, I remember you told me you were going to go. But you didn't tell me what your secret was. You said you had a secret formula that was going to enable you to preach in the West. And now maybe you can tell me since so much time has gone by. So Prabhupada said, yes, I will tell you. And my secret is, Trinadapi Suniche Na Toro Eva Sahishna Manida Manidina Kirtani Aksarakari. And that was his secret formula. This is what Dr. Kapoor told us. The Prabhupada's formula was that he would be very tolerant, very humble, like the tree, and not want respect from anyone and offer respect to all others. So this is a very important quality for devotees to develop, the quality of tolerance and humility. So that was what Prabhupada said was his secret of being successful, of going to be successful in the West. So there are many other gurus. I mentioned them all. Maybe I'll read one more and then we can have some questions. Although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world experiencing their various qualities and functions, he is never entangled, just as the wind, which carries various aromas, does not actually mix with them. Purport. Although we experience the wind as fragrant or foul, depending on the aroma it carries, the wind does not in fact change its actual nature. Similarly, says the purport, although we regard a particular person as strong or weak, intelligent or retarded, beautiful or homely, good or bad, the pure spirit soul, who is the actual person, does not really possess any of the qualities of the body, but is merely covered by them, just as the wind is covered by different aromas. Thus a Krishna conscious person is always aware that he is different from the temporary body. He experiences the various transformations of the body, such as childhood, adolescence, adulthood, and old age, but although he experiences the pains, pleasures, qualities, and functions of that body, a Krishna conscious person never thinks that he is that body. He is the body. He always understands that he is an eternal spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. As stated in this verse, Nayujyate Yogi, he is not entangled. The conclusion is that one should never consider a Krishna conscious person in terms of bodily designations, but should see him as an eternal servitor of the Lord. So this is from the 11th canto, part 1. And this book is available up in the membership office, Sitaram. Is that where it is? Okay. And maybe there's two of them there. There's two down here. So I'll read the verse again and then we can have some questions. Kardama uvacha tushto ham adyatava manava manavi manadaya shushushaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya yo dehi namaya madhiva suhitsa deho na vikshitasa muchita kshabitu mararte. Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Madhava, today I'm very much pleased with you for your great service, for your great devotion, not service, for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Since the body is so dear to embodied beings, I'm astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf. So, some comments or questions? Kalipani?
I'm wondering what the
Krishna conscious philosophy is on? Ornamental gardening. The question is, ornamental gardening means that we have to kill living entities, maybe uproot some plants or cut some trees or cut the grass or whatever, and that seems to be an avarat. There's a sect of Jains that sometimes wear, I've been to meetings where they wear a thing that looks like a surgical mask because they know that when you breathe, you kill living entities. It's also a fact that, and they don't want to do that, they're very nonviolent. Also, it's a fact that when we walk, we're stepping on living entities. So whether we're breathing or walking, we're killing living entities. Of course, ornamental gardening is a more active form of acting. I mean, it's a more proactive thing. So there's a couple of different things we can look at. You're asking what the philosophy is. And it's kind of more the Siddhanta, because a philosophy is generally the philosophy of ahimsa, of nonviolence. But we know there was a Kurukshetra war, and it doesn't mean that violence is always condemned. Prabhupada sometimes criticized Mohandas Gandhi because his principle was nonviolence in all spheres, including political. But he said that it was due to Subhash Chandra Bose that India was able to become independent. And then he criticized Gandhi for, he preached nonviolence, but he died by violence. So the idea is that sometimes violence is necessary. We read in the Bhagavad Gita that there are six times when violence can be enacted. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati also was known for saying that cobras are very dangerous and they could be killed. And Prabhupada said it was okay to have cats to eat the rats in a temple here. So although the philosophy and the Siddhanta is generally non, the philosophy is generally nonviolent, the Siddhanta is that sometimes, invariably and inevitably, we will kill other living entities. But the saving factor, the saving grace, literally grace, is that we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It is said in the Brahma Samhita and in the Nectar of Devotion that by engaging in devotional service constantly, we neutralize more sinful activities. We take them away. We take away the reactions of more sinful activities than we can actually commit. As Chindra Gopa Matabendra Mahosu Karma stated in the Brahma Samhita, that because Krishna is the controller of all the good things and the bad things that happen to everyone, from starting from the lowest Indra Gopa up to Indra or Brahman himself, if one engages in devotional service to that personality of Godhead, then all the karmic reactions, all the different karmas that would accrue to us by breathing, by stepping, by cutting, they will be taken away. All those simple reactions will be taken away. So part of making a beautiful place for Krishna, a beautiful place for people to come to Krishna consciousness, is making a very beautiful temple and keeping the rats out, keeping the garden nice. And Prabhupada gave the example by his own life that preaching very often, sometimes has to supersede the fact that simple activity will be committed. He even told some devotees that if they had to do it, if there was no other food to eat, they could even eat meat by offering it to Lord Krishna, so that they could live in order to preach Krishna consciousness. He wrote a couple of devotees' letter like that. So sometimes it will be necessary to do violence, although one doesn't like violence to other living entities. Sometimes it will be necessary. It's a big question. Yes? Do I need to repeat this question to people who aren't in the room or getting this on the microphone? Kitchen or any place else? Does everyone hear his question? Okay. One of the verses in the Bhagavatam, it's in the fifth canto, one of Lord Rishabhdev's teaching, is that one should not pita nasyat syat jana nasyat, you know the verse, famous verse, one shouldn't become a father, a mother, a worshipable demigod, a spiritual master, a husband, unless one can deliver one's dependence from death. So the first thing is one should not take on a position of being able to be worshipable in any form, I mean an official position like that, unless one is prepared to undergo whatever is necessary to deliver one's dependence from death, to liberate them, to make them Krishna conscious. So there's a great danger. As we value relationships consciously or unconsciously, in childhood we look to our parents for everything. As we grow a little older, it's our friends. As we grow a little older, it's boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife and whatever it may be. There's always role models and there's always relationships. So there's a tendency for us to be over the top, so to speak, in a relationship and just think that this person is to be all and end all. As in the material world, sometimes people, they don't recover from the death of a husband or wife or son or daughter or mother or father or dear friend. They just don't recover. They just go into deep depression and they can't pull out of it. So there's a kind of attachment that sometimes develops like that, we worship a particular devotee who's representing Krishna, you know, in some way or other. And that is a kind of Rupa Goswami talks about shadow attachment. It can be based on personality, it can be based on looks, it can be based on sound of the voice, it can be based on so many things that aren't the real depth of commitment to wanting pure love of Godhead and remembering Krishna at every moment. So if that kind of worship is there, it's not really worship. It's a kind of shadow attachment or a kind of sentimental way of relating with someone that can be very dangerous because it's not really based on Krishna. In other words, one who is taking that position of being a mentor to someone else, teaching someone else, should understand that Krishna is actually the ultimate teacher and the ultimate purifier. And if that person is in a position of spiritual master, they should realize that Krishna is going to purify all the karma, that if I try to take it on myself, then it's not transparent, it's stopped. So everything actually has to emanate from the Supreme Lord, and we all have to be transparent via media for Krishna's teachings. We're just following the books, we're following the teachings, we're following what Krishna wants. And if we try to somehow be the teacher, the be-all and end-all, then there's great danger. And to worship is also, like you said, like you queried, it can be very dangerous because we can put our faith in such person and then be disappointed that that person hasn't really burnt out all the deep desires in the heart. And then we're sort of left with if we put all of our faith in just one individual, then we run the risk of being left as orphans, so to speak. So we have to be careful. Therefore, Prabhupada is very much at the center. He's the acharya. Acharya means one who established something very big and great. And Prabhupada is our shiksha guru for everyone, really. And the more we understand that, the easier it is to understand that we're all potentially at least fallible human beings. And so there's definitely some danger. We have to be very careful and know that whatever or whoever we worship is actually very deeply connected with Krishna. And as I was saying before, there are many different spiritual masters. Even the wind and the sea and the mountains and the trees are spiritual masters. So we can worship all devotees and everything connected with Krishna. So I think we have time for one more. Yes.
You mentioned about the incident in Oxford that Prabhupada the picture of Prabhupada that we see the picture of Christ over there. In this context, something happened to me. Generally, I chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra, but my spiritual master, Sri Prabhupada, also made me sing Mercy Jesus, Mercy Jesus, 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 Mercy, Mercy.
Sally Agarwal wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and he liked the letter because in the letter she said that her daughter referred to Prabhupada as Swami Jesus, and Prabhupada liked that because he wrote her back and said that, I think there's a saying from the mouth of babes comes jewels of wisdom or something like that. He was very happy that this child saw him as such a great spiritual personality. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Sarasri Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.